James B. Comey was unceremoniously fired by President Trump last month. Comey was giving a speech to FBI recruits in Los Angeles at the time. This after the president apparently pressured Comey to back off of his work investigating Russian meddling in the 2016 election. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer Kent in for Joy Cardine. As Comey's testimony before Congress now just hours away, we want to keep our eye on what revelations are important. Laura Brown is helping us out on this front. She's an associate professor and interim director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. She's the editor of the forthcoming book, Campaigning for President 2016, Strategy and Tactics. Laura is an expert in presidential politics and elections, campaigns, and political scandals. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Joy.
So, demand for seats inside the Senate hearing room has reached levels not seen in decades. TV stations have clocks ticking down to when FBI, when fired FBI Director James Comey is expected to testify this morning. Why this fervor, this anticipation? Could this hearing be that pivotal?
Well, I don't think that this hearing will be that pivotal, and I actually think this sort of hype around it is somewhat detrimental. And why I say that is because what we're doing here is increasingly politicizing and in some ways, I would argue, kind of making, farce of what has gone on here in Washington and what perhaps happened during the campaign. You know, an actual investigation and the investigation that Robert Mueller is now leading is something that should happen privately, quietly, confidentially. He should be, bringing together a grand jury, presenting that sort of testimony and these kinds of statements before a grand jury to really look to whether or not there is an actual case here. And I feel as though when you look at what's happening in Washington and the media environment, it is all just one giant show, which is a problem if there has actually been wrongdoing.
Comey's opening statement was released yesterday afternoon, 7 pages. It shows that President Trump asked him to let go of the investigation into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Comey also says Trump told him that he needs and expects loyalty and that he assured Trump that he was not a target of the investigation. What's your reaction to what has been released so far?
Well, I think what we've seen is that the president has been terribly inappropriate and really in so many ways kind of misguided in his decisions to try to, get his hands around what is happening. I mean, I think what you see is that you have a president who keeps kind of assuming that he can just be a CEO who can just clear things up with a few conversations and have it be done. My colleague here at George Washington University, Professor Jonathan Turley, says this is not prima facie evidence of obstruction of justice. And I would have to agree with that what we have here is a lot of what is perceived as essentially inappropriate and really bad judgment on the part of the president to try to bring to conclusion something that may or may not be relevant for him.
There seems to be one word against another. He said, she said sort of thing playing out here. If that is the case, it's one word against another, where do we go from here in the investigation?
Well, I think that is the piece that is so important for the public to realize, is that at the end of the day, were this going to be something that could be prosecutable? I do think that Senator Lindsey Graham is right on about this. This is not something that Mueller would have allowed to have happened, meaning having your star witness, James Comey, be testifying in public prior to any sort of trial. So I think Senator Graham is right in that assessment. But I would also say that I think Representative Adam Schiff is right in his assessment, which is that there appears to be really some inappropriate behavior, and there is more to understand and more to uncover, and we do need to go forward with that. So this is where I think both parties need to take a step back. I think the Democrats have already, at least in terms of their leadership, decided that they are not going to be kind of talking up impeachment, that everyone really just needs to see where these investigations go, what comes out, and what we actually know, and then what is or is not prosecutable in terms of a crime.
Laura Brown is with us. She's an associate professor and interim director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. We're talking about the James Comey testimony that is taking place later on this morning with the Senate Intelligence Committee. His opening statement made public yesterday, seven-page document. He outlines how President Trump sought a pledge of loyalty and an end to the investigation into his national security advisor, then Michael Flynn. What do you make of Comey's statement? Will you be following his testimony today? Weigh into this conversation at 800-642-1234. What are you listening for from Comey today? 800-642-1234. You can post your thoughts on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Laura, let's go back for a moment and talk a little bit more about this threshold for obstruction of justice. What is it? And based on what we know from Comey so far, are we in the ballpark or not? And why?
Well, I don't think we are in the ballpark in the sense that obstruction of justice is typically, at least according to, I will tell you, my legal scholar colleague, Jonathan Turley, has much more to do with, in fact, whether or not somebody is obstructing an actual case, not necessarily just an investigation, and that the courts have a more narrow ruling, and that the president just essentially expressing all of his dissatisfaction and his desire for this to end doesn't meet essentially a legal standard. And this is where, when I look at this entire spectacle, I think what we have going on here is really more of a case being made against President Trump that he is incompetent and unfit to serve as president, even if what he has done does not rise to the level of criminality.
Well, let's go yesterday's testimony. Top intelligence chief, they testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee, repeatedly declined to say anything about their conversations with President Trump. And here is Senator Angus King. He's an independent from Maine. Here he's grilling National Security Agency Director Mike Rogers.
Why are you not answering these questions? Is there an invocation by the President of the United States of executive privilege? Is there or not?
Not that I'm aware of.
Then why are you not answering
our
questions?
Because I feel it is inappropriate, Senator.
What you feel isn't relevant, Admiral. What you feel isn't the answer. The answer is, why are you not answering the questions? Is it an invocation of executive privilege? If there is, then let's know about it. If there isn't, answer the questions.
I stand by the comments I've made. I'm not interested in repeating myself, sir. And I don't mean that in a contentious way.
Well, I do mean it in a contentious way. I don't understand why you're not answering our question.
What do you make of the tenor of this questioning?
Well, what I make of this is that, first of all, these two individuals are officially still within the executive branch. And so there is some sort of limits on what they may feel, as the Admiral said, is appropriate or not appropriate. But I think this also goes to the other issue with regard to Comey and his testimony. At the end of the day, if Robert Mueller is going to be able to bring a case, then they are going to have corroborating evidence. They're going to have enough evidence that shows that it's not just the he said, she said, that it's not just the contemporaneous memos, that this was a widespread sort of pattern, and that there is other documentation and other individuals involved. So it is possible that these individuals are sort of wrapped up in this investigation from Mueller's side of the world, and that as he looks at this, he is not necessarily going to be wanting them to also kind of open up to the public in these very public forums, you know, what could or may be a case.
We're talking right now with Laura Brown, an associate professor at George Washington University, interim director of the Graduate School of Political Management, talking about Mr. Comey's testimony coming up this morning. What do you make of Comey's statement that has come out so far? 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. After 9, our time, fired FBI Director James Comey is set to testify in front of the Senate committee investigating Russia meddling, specifically about what he says President Trump asked him to do with regard to the investigation. We'll be carrying this hearing live right here on the Ideas Network. Hope you can stay with us for that special coverage. Right now, we're looking at the various sides to this evolving investigation with Laura Brown. She's an associate professor and interim director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. She's the editor of the forthcoming book, Campaigning for President 2016, Strategy and Tactics. We're taking your calls as well, 800-642-1234. Do you agree with former National Intelligence Director James Clapper that allegations of collusion with Russia are far more serious than Watergate? Or is that inflated? Join in, 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Laura, let's go back to James Clapper and his comments he made yesterday. We do here have a clip of those. He said that the cover-up of the 1972 burglary at the Democratic National Party headquarters in the Watergate complex in Washington that ended Richard Nixon's presidency was a, quote, scary time. But this investigation into Russia meddling with last fall's election is even scarier. Let's take a listen.
I have to say, though, that I think you know, compare the two, that Watergate pales really, in my view, as compared to what we're confronting now.
So how would we compare Watergate with today's Russia?
Well, I think what James Clapper is referring to, and I would agree with him on this, is the underlying crime, right? If we are talking about an underlying crime to burglarize the, you know, DNC and to get essentially materials of what was going on the campaign, and it was all essentially campaign operatives to campaign operatives, all within essentially the U.S. system, then Watergate looks very minuscule in comparison to essentially trying to disrupt an election by bringing in a foreign adversary to, in fact, do sort of the hacking and, if you will, the modern burglary. I mean, all of those whisper campaigns being done by Russia and perhaps, you know, further, you know, trying to upset and fish, if you will, the state level elected officials and the voter rolls, that's even more problematic.
Let's take a call now. George in Sparta. Hi, George.
Hello.
What would you like to add?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. What I want to add is, there's always going to be a dance around and shadow dances around if it's a crime or not. What I like to find out is, has it been addressed? If it is not a crime, is it against moral and ethical points in regards to it? And if it is, wouldn't that be a something to look at, that it may be a treasonous thing to cover this up. And I think one has to do soul searching. I hope that President Trump does that. And I'll take my answer or comment off the air.
Laura?
I would just say I couldn't agree more. I actually think whether this is a crime or not somewhat misses the point. I think what we have to look here at is how this entire sort of scandal has revealed in so many ways the incompetence and the inexperience of President Trump and his associates, and that if they did have any sort of collusion with the Russians, then what we're talking about is morally and ethically wrong. And so I do think that, you know, your caller is 100% right. The larger scandal that we're looking at, and I think is a much more important one, and really at the end of the day will speak to whether or not an impeachment can be brought, is President Trump fit to sit in that office?
Let's take, let's go here. Earlier this year, Attorney General Jeff Sessions recused himself from the Russia investigation. Several media outlets are reporting that President Trump never got over that and has grown increasingly upset with him since. It apparently got so bad that before Mr. Trump left for his overseas trip, Sessions offered his resignation, which Mr. Trump didn't accept. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer declined to say this week whether President Trump still has confidence in Jeff Sessions, who was one of Trump's earliest and most vocal supporters. Where are we in this evolving story?
Well, certainly I think there is displeasure on the part of the president for Jeff Sessions recusing himself from this investigation. I think he probably perceives this as, you know, an act of disloyalty on the part of Jeff Sessions, but in fact, anyone who was an attorney and understood kind of the delicate position that Sessions was in would understand why Sessions recused himself. That being said, I imagine that the president will not, actually get rid of Sessions or in any way sort of push him out of his position, because he does have, I would argue, some loyalty, not just to Jeff Sessions, for the fact that Sessions was one of the very first elected officials to provide legitimacy to Donald Trump's campaign, but also Sessions has tremendous sort of loyalty and support among, you know, evangelical Christians, and many people within that community, I think, would feel that the president was turning his back on them were he to dismiss Sessions so ingloriously.
We're talking right now with Laura Brown, an associate professor in George Washington University's Graduate School of Political Management, about the Senate Intelligence Committee meeting today, Mr. Comey's testimony coming up here in a couple hours or so. And you can add your voice to this conversation at 800-642-1234. There's a line open for you. What will you be listening for in this testimony? Will you be following it? If so, why or why not? 800-642-1234. You can also post your thoughts on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We now have the first criminal leak case of the Trump presidency. Reality Lynn Winner, a contractor with an NSA eavesdropping facility in Georgia, was arrested over the weekend for printing a top secret intelligence report detailing Russian interference in the presidential election, mailing it to a reporter at The Intercept. According to the FBI, Winner confessed when confronted, and she had frequently expressed outrage at the president on social media in the months after Trump was elected. How big of a problem, Laura, are these leaks from within the federal government itself?
Well, certainly they're a problem, and they are a problem for every presidential administration. This is something that most presidents try to clamp down on and try to at least have some high-profile prosecutions of, to essentially make the case to federal employees and contractors that this is not necessarily whistleblowing behavior, that there is a difference between a leak and a whistleblower. And presidents are usually beset with these kinds of problems, and so it doesn't surprise me that sort of on the heels of all that has been happening, that an individual who was discovered to be a leaker was in a very high-profile way charged with being a leaker.
Will there be more reality winners out there?
I think there could be. I think we will see, Attorney General Sessions' attempt to clamp down on leakers, even if it's not related to the, you know, Russia case or any of these other issues.
Yesterday on Twitter, President Trump announced that Christopher Wray, a former assistant attorney general in charge of the Justice Department's criminal division under President George W. Bush, would be his choice to succeed Mr. Comey as FBI director. Mr. Trump said Wray has impeccable credentials. What do we know about Christopher Wray and how he might run the agency?
Well, I think what's interesting is we don't know a lot, in the sense that he hasn't necessarily been a high-profile, attorney or prosecutor here in Washington, D.C. He did serve in President George W. Bush's administration. The Miami Herald does have out today a story about him being essentially aware of some of the issues with regard to Abu Ghraib before the Abu Ghraib scandal became public, and that he was aware of and in receipt of a CIA briefing about perhaps questionable legal treatment in the Abu Ghraib facility. So I think we'll have to see how that plays out against his record of being somebody who has been kind of respected but more low profile here in D.C.
He was the personal attorney for Chris Christie in the Bridgegate scandal?
Yes. I mean, certainly he is somebody who did just help Chris Christie, ensure that that scandal stopped before it got to his desk. But many of Chris Christie's associates were found to have legal problems and have misstepped their political roles. And so, it seems to me that this was something of a wise decision for the president, in the sense that he may be well looking for someone to ensure that even if there are other crimes with regard to associates and the Russia scandal, it stops before it reaches the White House door.
So President Trump may live tweet Comey's testimony today. Of course, very active president on Twitter. What does he have to gain or to lose by tweeting today?
I think he has everything to lose and nothing to gain. President Trump believes that if he keeps tweeting to the people who follow him and to his supporters, that they will decide that every other piece of information out there is fake news and is not real. And while there may be some core of his supporters who do believe that, I think what we can see in the partisan affiliation numbers that Gallup released on June 6th and some of the other numbers that Nate Silver just went over in terms of polling and the president's approval rating, the president's support is starting to fade among those who most strongly believed in him. The people who were skeptical but willing to kind of take a leap of faith are now starting to strongly disapprove. And the Democrats have essentially held steady in their party affiliation, the number of Americans who identify with their party, whereas the Republicans have, at this point, since Trump's inauguration, lost 4 percentage points. And that's not a small number when we're talking about the margin that is growing in party affiliation between the two political parties.
Gary on Facebook is saying that Mr. Trump seems to have asked Mr. Comey and perhaps others to do what they could to wrap up the Flynn investigation, apply pressure. His requests seem to have been ignored, or the people concluded they couldn't or shouldn't do anything to wrap up the Flynn investigation. Gary contrasts President Obama, who told the Justice Department to not investigate and enforce the Defense of Marriage Act, and he did the same for a variety of other immigration laws. He did the same for the federal marijuana laws. The Justice Department listened to him, Gary says, and did not pursue investigation of and prosecution of offenses against these duly enacted federal laws. Gary says, I recall no suggestion nor investigation of obstruction of justice against President Obama, yet he succeeded in stopping laws from being enforced, and President Trump did not succeed in the same, yet we are talking about obstruction of justice in President Trump's case. How are these different?
Well, in Trump's case, the question is whether or not it's an investigation that is relevant to him. It is not simply just, you know, a law that the president would prefer not to be enforced. I think what you can see is no one is alleging obstruction of justice with regard to President Trump's executive orders that have amounted to travel bans and his sort of tweeting or his encouraging the Justice Department to continue to pursue those cases. In other words, we're not talking here about policy. We are talking about an investigation in which the president is at least a person of interest, if not a more individual who is under investigation.
Every day there are new developments and new unnamed sources in stories that we're reading all across the major newspapers, New York Times, Washington Post. A lot of the media accounts about the Russia investigation are mentioning anonymous sources. Lara, how should people be interpreting these reports?
Well, I think the most important thing when it comes to anonymous sources is whether or not multiple news outlets are reporting the same story. And the reason why is because then when you have multiple outlets reporting the same story, what you have is multiple journalists speaking with multiple sources. In other words, it's not just one person who is essentially talking to one reporter, and one outlet is then using background of other people. There is much greater confirmation and confidence one can have when it is multiple outlets reporting the same story across multiple sources.
Is there a feeding frenzy going on, do you think?
I do think, you know, things like the countdown clock and the sort of continuous coverage is really, I would argue, pretty inappropriate. I mean, I think there is a level of hype around this that just doesn't help the country. At the end of the day, part of the reason why Donald Trump was elected was because many Americans were frustrated by the partisan theatrics that seem to so often replace action and essentially legislation here in Washington. And so a repeat of kind of theatrics, but instead of the Republicans going after a Democratic president, or instead of essentially there's being some other scandal that is enticing and creating frothiness in the media, we now have a situation where, you know, a sort of new president who is absolutely unsure and inexperienced is now part of this conversation.
And I'm going to jump in there. We're going right to the news from NPR. The Republican National Committee is defending President Trump, saying that James Comey's testimony backs up Trump's claim that the former FBI director told him on three occasions the president was not under an FBI investigation. The RNC is focusing on one aspect of Comey's testimony it says is being overlooked, that Trump is not at the center of a broader counterintelligence investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for Joy Cardine. You can join into the discussion at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or add the conversation on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you think Comey's exchanges with the president are overblown? Are we making too much of this? Lara Brown stays with us. She's an associate professor and interim director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. Lara, what do you make of how the Republican National Committee is defending President Trump here? How do you see what they are doing in this whole greater testimony and investigation?
Well, I think they are doing what it is they're charged with doing, which is supporting the president of their party. So both the Democratic National Committee and the Republican National Committee sort of have as their organizing feature or basis to be the outside partisan support for the office of the president when it's of their party. And if it's And this is where I think what you see is that the RNC is doing what we would expect. It is pushing back on sort of all of the Democrats' sort of suggestions that Comey's report is prima facie evidence of obstruction of justice. It is pushing back on this notion that President Trump has in any way done any wrongdoing, and in fact saying, look, Comey's testimony says the president is not under investigation. So I think the RNC is doing what we would expect, and it is certainly doing what the West Wing and the President Trump's administration cannot really do without sort of more legal problems.
Let's take another caller now, Paul in Madison. Hi, Paul.
Good morning to you both. I'm amazed at the level of unsophistication on the part of both the president and General Flynn in particular, because, General Flynn, not to be completely forthcoming with investigators in terms of his relationships with Russians and registering and his other registering as a federal foreign agent of a government. I was in military intelligence. I went through two background investigations, and I was told by the investigating officers, when we ask you a question, be totally forthright with us and don't equivocate, because if we find out that you have done this to us, you will lose your clearance faster than you can say white on rice. And so it seems to me these individuals who are these high-ranking positions have put their self-interest ahead of their interest of their country. And I'm really appalled by that, having served 7 years in the regular army. And that's all I have to say.
Lara?
Well, I mean, I just couldn't agree more. What is stunning to me is sort of the sheer level. I mean, I think you're very kind in saying unsophistication. There is a level at which you look at this, and it just seems to be utter stupidity, or it's complete arrogance to believe that one could get away with these kinds of actions and assume that it would all be okay. I think this is part of kind of the larger conversation about what really is the scandal here. And from my eyes, what I see the scandal as being is how sort of ruthlessly ambitious these individuals were to serve what appear to be much more private interests than necessarily public interests. And I think that's where I will tell you I'm personally more interested in how this Russia investigation plays out in terms of who had contacts with whom and what were the financial interests of all of the associates involved in the Trump world, and why is it that Russia was looked to as potentially a sort of nation that in which you would work with on these matters. So all of this is much more disconcerting to me when you look at the deeper crimes rather than, if you will, the obstruction of justice, which is being focused on today.
Lara, do we know, is there a roadmap for where this Russia investigation goes next? And these other chapters, including what you mentioned, financial interests?
Well, we know that different committees have asked for different documents from, say, the Treasury Department. There has been some requests for the financial disclosures of different individuals involved with these Russia contacts. And this is where I also believe some of what is happening today and some of what is happening in public with the Senate and even with the House committee is really distracting, and maybe not in a way that deserves Mueller, because Director Mueller may be more interested in these other questions and these deeper potential problems and associations and possible collusions than kind of what the public is focusing on. And I assume he's going to continue to quietly and persistently pursue the question of, was there collusion with Russia, and how far did Russia disrupt our elections?
The White House has cast off James Comey as a, quote, showboat. Normally, FBI directors are working in the background. Comey now a household name for so many who have been following this. What do you make of that and the change here in now that we know all about James Comey?
Well, I actually think the most damning part of kind of Trump's testimony, or I should say Comey's testimony about what Trump said to him, is sort of this notion about what loyalty is and how much he expected that and what, you know, I mean, he makes a statement that, you know, he says on an April 11th phone call, according to Comey's testimony, Trump says, "I've been very loyal to you, very loyal. We had that thing, you know." That thing, I'm not sure what the president is referring to, but I am assuming that what he is saying is, you know, I defended you during the campaign when you chose to make a statement about, Secretary Clinton and the investigation at that time. And why aren't you essentially doing that for me? And I think that, to me, is one of the most kind of damning suggestions that the president made. And I think we'll see how this plays out today in testimony and what Comey's going to say.
Is this type of loyalty that we're hearing about pervasive in the West Wing? Because what about groupthink?
Well, certainly it is true that in Washington, you pretty much have two things. You have your own reputation, and then you have your reputation for being loyal to those individuals who appoint you or essentially support you and back you and stand by you. And so there is this suggestion where the president, you know, is sounding as though he has kind of authority over Jim Comey. Now, he officially does, because the president can dismiss and reappoint the FBI director. But I think the tradition in Washington has been that the FBI director has generally been somebody who has served their 10-year term and been thought of as a kind of nonpartisan appointee. That being said, it certainly appears from this testimony that Trump was trying to say, I have some power over you, you might want to watch your step. And that's where this question of what really did happen, and is there more evidence than just the he said discussion to actually make this worthy of a crime.
What are you going to be watching for, listening for during Comey's questioning this morning?
I think the biggest thing I'm interested in is how essentially he sort of created these memoranda, you know, how they came to be, who he talked to about these, why they were not sort of raised to kind of other elected officials. I mean, if he were really concerned about sort of President Trump's kind of persistent efforts to get him to drop this Russia probe, then it seems to me there would be kind of a greater paper trail than just one he created and put into a desk drawer.
Are memoranda like these standard operating procedure? How unusual is this to keep this detailed record of your contact with someone?
Well, I will tell you that, you know, my father is an attorney, and I am not. But I know from years and years of conversations with my father about the law is that when you are concerned about wrongdoing, it is a good idea to try to create some sort of documentation around it. And I think anyone who is in any kind of, you know, employment situation or any kind of work and professional situation in which they believe there is wrongdoing or ethical missteps, creating written contemporaneous evidence is always going to help your cause later on.
So Comey's paper trail here could actually be, it goes back to just the very notion of what people should do when they think there is something going on in their environment that should be looked at further.
I mean, I think that's right, Kate. I really think, you know, and I've seen people decide, you know, to do things in different environments, and other individuals have said, maybe we should get a paper trail of this. And this is where, quite frankly, email has proven lately to be much more damning to many people in many situations.
We'll leave it there. Lara, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you.
Lara Brown is an associate professor and interim director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. She's the editor of the forthcoming book, Campaigning for President 2016, Strategy and Tactics. The Joy Cardine Show is produced by Bill Martins and Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for Joy Cardine, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.